Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Thank you all for getting up this morning. I hope you've made a special trip to see me.
Yes.
Even though you've never heard of me before. This is my wonderful assistant, Trudy, who I met at an event like this. And I might go into how I met her later on, if we have time. What you have on your seats is a brochure. Inside is a prize draw. If you fill in the prize draw, you get a chance to win 50% of a session with me or win a CD for an issue of your choice. And if it's something I don't do already, I'll do one for you specifically. Because everybody else will want it anyway. Trudy has clipboards and pens if you want to fill that in. And please either leave it at the front of the table or with Trudy when you leave.
Thank
you. Thanks, Rodan. Okay. So, just to allow a few minutes for just if anybody turns up, because it's only just gone 11. I'll just tell you briefly about me, because you didn't come for an advert, did you? I'm Stephen Blake, and I help people to control their thoughts. I classify myself as a thought tamer. Can everybody hear me all right at the back?
Yeah, that's what they just
said. No, right. Okay.
If you turn up, you might get feedback.
Yeah, I'll get feedback. I will talk louder. Is that better?
Yes.
Still, if you can't hear me, then please, there's still a few seats at the front that might be better for you. Okay? Right. So, I'm Stephen Blake, and I help people with their thoughts. And even though it's thoughts, sometimes it's actual physical ailments that are brought on by your thoughts. This doesn't mean that it's all in your head. The brain controls absolutely everything. It runs your nervous system, it runs the whole lot. So it's listening into everything you do, and it will do what it thinks you want it to do. And I'm going to explain all that this morning. So I typically help people with anxiety, however many years they've had it. So my record so far is 56 years worth of anxiety, and I usually help people remove it in one session. So it's a great thing for clients. It's not a good business model because I need new people all the time. So if you leave here today, even if this if there's nothing I can do for you, please feel free to take as many brochures and cards for friends. And somebody came to me 2-3 weeks ago, came for a session, passed the card on to a friend who was depressed, not knowing that the following day she was about to commit suicide. And she drove off somewhere, and actually it was either commit suicide or ring me, and she rang me. And I fetched her in straight away. So literally passing cards around could save her life. Literally. And strangely, 2 weeks after I helped her, she saw a woman stepping out into the road in front of the car absentmindedly and went and pulled her out the road. So another life saved. So absolutely marvellous. Because she sent me a message and I said, last week you didn't value your own life and now there's two families not grieving because of you. Okay. So I don't always deal with things as serious as that, but I can do. Okay, so I'm going to talk about brain bargaining. You won't have heard of it before because I made it up. It's unique to me. It's a blend of different things that I've found to be effective. And it's just literally how we talk to our unconscious mind and get it to do things for us. And you can't demand things of your unconscious mind. That's called willpower. And willpower doesn't seem to work. If I describe first how your brain works, you have two elements to your brain. One is your conscious mind, and the other is what I call the unconscious. Most people call it the subconscious. But sub means under. And when I explain what your unconscious does, you won't think of it as under anymore. Your conscious mind, little bit there, holds 8 bits of data. That is literally a phone number, 1 digit at a time. If it can hold that, it can't do much of anything else. Unless you're doing something that you've done over and over again, like washing up or something. You can think and wash up, or you can think and drive, or you can think and do anything that you've done hundreds of thousands of times. But if you think, it just tends to be just one topic. And you get locked into that, and then you can be disturbed by somebody just saying hi, and then you come out of it, and then you're back into the topic again as soon as they've left. So the bit we think we're clever with is not worth much of anything. But it's the bit that gives us our free will. The unconscious does most of everything. So the moment you were born, the unconscious was running your heart, your lungs, your blood, your temperature, absolutely hundreds of thousands of things all at the same time. And every cell in your body talks to the brain anyway. So this is why when we get pain, it goes, oh, something's happened here. And the brain goes, oh, how many cells are hurt? And then it goes, thousands. And it goes, oh, lots of pain needed. Right? Whereas if you scratch yourself, the cells go, oh, we're hurt. You go, how many of you? Five. No. Just a pinprick. Literally. So your brain deals with everything. And even as I'm talking now, I don't know the next sentence. And usually when I say that, I actually then can't say the next sentence. Because the unconscious is working on it. So the unconscious does absolutely everything for you. And the only purpose of having a conscious is to steer it. And we can steer it with that. But, yeah. It's all right. I don't like microphones and my assistant's going, speak up. And you've put me right off now. You wait while I get you home. Now, where was I truly then?
Probably unconscious.
It always is. So, so the conscious gets filled up very quickly. The unconscious does everything else. You were born with lots and lots of programs that made you survive. And then we're given these wonderful things called mothers that look after us then until we can fend for ourselves. And because of that, we are the sort of species that has looked after for longer than any other species, really. And during that time, we learn how the world works. The first 5 years, we just copy everybody else. We see what goes on around us, and we go, oh, that walking looks good. I'll have a bit of that. But it takes us ages to do it. First of all, we have to crawl, then we have to get up and sort of balance on things, and then we can hold ourselves steady. And it takes absolutely ages. And that's because it's probably the most complex thing we ever do. There's so many different parts of the body, all coordinating together, and the sense of balance, and the sense of where your ankle is, and if it's twisted or it's not, or where it is. There's so much going on there. And this is why when we learn it, it's difficult. Because we're trying to think, oh, I need to balance. And then we have to think, well, but to walk, you have to move one leg. And as soon as we pick that leg up, we fall over. And we do that time after time after time until we've taught ourselves how to do it. As soon as you can walk properly, you can then adapt it. So you can adapt it to walking on rough surfaces. You can go up hills with it, even though your feet are in different places to what you originally learned. So we learn things, we adapt them, and then we pass it over to the unconscious and we say, I don't want to have to think about walking, because I would like to be able to walk and talk at the same time. That would be a nice thing. So we pass it over to the unconscious and we go, you do the walking now. So anything you have to do, anytime you have to walk, I mean, you didn't get to the bottom of the stairs here and go, stairs, right, I better lift my foot a bit higher and go up. It absolutely, everything's automatic. So for the first 5 years, we copy everything. Now, that is brilliant if you're brought up in wonderful surroundings with loving parents. You expect to have loving, be part of loving parents when you become a parent. You expect things to be a lot better, or how they were, that you imagine. If you're brought up in a house where mum and dad argue all the time, you expect that of your relationships in the future. It sort of sets the sort of mark for it at that early age. Later on, you might decide that's not what you want, but that's still the example you were given at the age, up to the age of 5. Around the age of 6, we change slightly. we not only want to be told things and copy things, we actually now want to find out the rules for it. How does it work? And this is when we get to the why mummy stage. Okay? And when you get that why mummy, and you explain it, and then they still go, why mummy? And after a while you say, because you do. Because mummy says so. Okay? But the reality, what's happened is, instead of the, I know mummy, you tell me to do it, and I'll try and do it, sometimes I get it wrong. But now what I want to do is, I want to know, next time I should do this, what are the rules? And then, instead of you having to say, oh, do this now, I can say, look at me, I'm doing it. Right? So this is the difference. It's about the age of six. So, but a recent report says that 80% of everything we know about life, we learned before we were six. So before we challenged it. So all the things that you observe going on around you, you actually think that's how life is. And for most of them, you carry on thinking that's how life is. The other things, we adapt. So we carry on walking and we learn how to get better at walking and running and doing other things. And then if we get injured, we actually learn to walk with a limp. We get a way around it, even though we're not doing what we originally taught ourselves to do, we actually adapt to it. And the same with language and other things. Let me have a slurp of water. Some things, though. Okay. I'm really. Are you alright then if you don't see them? Alright. So, it might not make any difference because the speaker's at the back of the room. So, what if I flip this to the top then? It did?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, sorry at the front then. If you don't mind spinning your heads or your chair a little bit. Everybody all right then? Okay. Right. That restricts where I am, doesn't it? Everybody here, look about now. Great. Okay. So, you have to get up here, where I was. I do 8 microphones. I have smaller rooms usually. Okay. As we get older in life, we... things happen to us and we start having to think about what happened to us. So if somebody comes to see me with a severe trauma like anxiety or depression or whatever, I always know it started in my childhood. Because as an adult, you can actually go, it was because of this or because of that or something I did or something they did. As a child, if something very traumatic happens to you, and I mean traumatic as to you at that age, I don't mean it has to be something really traumatic. It can be something as simple as something that's said to you that you misunderstand. And that can bring on a trauma where you feel absolutely horrendous. Just for a few moments, but you go into that sort of almost like a panic of fear, and you lock up and the body fills up with chemicals and you don't know what's going on. This is why I say most things do go back to the childhood. It's not about psychology. It's just literally how you can't cope with it then. And so something that happens to somebody as a severe trauma when they're children, they take it on board, and in that moment there's a learning that takes place. Now, I said that most things you learn by doing over and over again. So you learn to walk by getting up, standing, and then gradually crawling, and then doing so on. But some things you learn in an instant. One is a phobia. A phobia is an instant thing. Has anybody got phobias in the room? Yeah? Okay. Whatever your phobia is, I can almost guarantee if I checked it out, it wouldn't be the thing that you think it's about. Okay? It's always something else. So for instance, I had a woman about a rat phobia, and she couldn't even say rat. Sorry, has anybody got a rat phobia? Okay. Yeah, okay. Whatever I'm going to say, somebody's going to have, aren't they? Anyway, she came with this phobia. And she couldn't even say it. And I treated it as though it was a rat phobia. And she... It always worked. When people leave me, it's always worked. And she had to ring me up and say, I don't think it's any better. And I said, what's not better? She said, the rat phobia. And said it absolutely perfectly. So I said, well, I think you are, but you just don't realise it. But come in. And it turned out what had happened is she'd gone into the kitchen one morning on her own and seen something run across the floor, but she didn't know what it was. And in that moment of terror, there was this fear of unknown things that run fast. Okay. She then went back down with her mother and saw a mouse on the table, and her mother screamed. And that was a story that she told me the first time round, was just going in this room and her mother screamed, so I thought it was about the reaction to her mother's reaction. So I said, well, you haven't got a rat phobia, you've actually got a fear of fast-moving things in front of your face. And I moved my hand and she nearly jumped out of the chair. And I went, yeah, that proves it, doesn't it? Okay. So we learn things very quickly in one session. So a phobia is one of them. Another thing is anxiety. If anybody has anxiety, it's that feeling that something bad is going to happen all the time. You can't pinpoint it, you might even not know it's that. But there's just that feeling as though something bad's going to happen and you're watching out for it. And that's because at the time of this initial trauma, you might not even remember it, you go into the mode where you go, I'm terrified, I don't want this to happen again. And as soon as you go into that mode, the brain goes, well, what are we going to do then? And so it comes up with this little program that it runs for you, and it's called watch out for everything. Because next time, if you see it early, you can probably avoid it. And that's all that happens. That's all anxiety is. It's hypervigilance. You're on the lookout all the time for these bad things. And whenever we look out for bad things, what are we most likely to see? Bad things, okay? So we end up doing this thing where if we get a bit negative about things, then things go wrong, then we notice those things, so more things go wrong, and then we complain about those things, and we get on that vicious downward spiral of, oh, isn't life bad? And then you don't notice anything good. In fact, anything good happens, you push it away. Right? Has anybody here kept pushing people away in relationships? They come in and they're very nice, and then suddenly you're doing the, I might get hurt here, so I'll push you and push you and push you, and then eventually you'll leave me, and then I'll go, I knew you would. And somehow we have that, oh, yeah, I'm right. And you keep proving yourself right, because you keep expecting things to go wrong, and when they go wrong, that proves you're right yet again. So there's hardly any convincing you that the world is a wonderful place. So anxiety comes from a one-time learning. Depression comes from a one-time learning. It might be a chemical imbalance in your brain, but that chemical imbalance in your brain is caused by the change of chemicals, because you're always thinking about a thing that's going to go wrong. And if you're thinking about a thing that's going to go wrong, and I'm going to do an exercise with you in a second or two, you produce the chemicals as though it has gone wrong. And the brain doesn't know any difference between things have gone wrong or you're thinking that things have gone wrong. So it makes an absence of a chemical, and it makes more of the chemical that you don't want. So it makes you sad stuff, but it doesn't make you happy stuff. And that's learned in one session. The only difference between when I help people with anxiety and when I help people with depression is, if you take anxiety off somebody, all you're taking off them is this feeling that something bad's going to happen. The life just changes in an instant as soon as they leave. In fact, while they're there, I can see them change. Everybody grows about 2 inches taller, so if you're already tall, don't come to me. Okay? But they grow about 2 inches, and the face changes, and they look about 10 years younger. I should advertise it as a beauty parlour, really. But it's gone. They then have a week of thinking anxious thoughts that the anxiety might come back, which I assure them it won't. After a week, that's it, they're done, they're sorted, no anxiety, or normal levels of anxiety, not this hypervigilance. Whereas with depression, if you take the darkness off somebody, because it's the darkness they hide in, So when that thing happened to them, they went, oh my God, I don't want to feel this again. And the brain went, what shall I do? And it went, hide. And so they hide in a dark place. It's almost like it's got a drawstring on it. And they pull the drawstring up until there's a little bit of light there. And they remove all the feelings so they're not going to get hurt. So initially, that horrible thing called depression that you hate going into was a safety net for you. It was a beautiful, safe place with no emotions. But it's not that anymore, is it? Okay, so you go into this dark place, you leave enough light to peer out of, and you go, is it over yet? And when it's over, you come back out. Now, people who have depression can be in a great mood, they can be at a party or something, and depression comes on like that. And so people will say, well, that's not me wanting to go and hide in a hole, because I'm having a great time. Why would I want this depression to come on? No, you didn't want the depression to come on. Your unconscious mind has seen or thought about something that usually triggers you off into depression, something it can't cope with. And as soon as it can't cope, it goes, go in the dark hole. And you go, I don't want to. And it goes, get in there, it's safe. And it pushes you in the dark hole. And while you're there, you've got no feelings. So things can't hurt you. But also you can hurt you. Because in that darkness, there's one thing where you can control pain. If you're in pain and somebody else is inflicting it to you, you can't do anything about it. But if you inflict pain on yourself, you can actually feel the pain and go, but I can stop this any time I want to. And this is why people self-harm. So you go into this dark hole. So if I take that dark hole off you and go, right, you're better now, as soon as you meet anything that you can't deal with, because you've spent a whole life of not dealing with things, you haven't got the toolkit there to actually deal with it. So if I help somebody with depression, I have to keep helping them to actually learn the skills to deal with life. So we've got phobias, we've got anxiety, we've got depression, all come from a one-time learning. This is not just me saying this is a lot of my clients, this is 100% of my clients. And when I ask them what's wrong with them, they'll give me a list. Sometimes there's 5-6 things on the list. And they say, you can't possibly help me. Can't possibly help me with these 5 or 6 things in one session. And I go, I can, because there's a thread running through it. And that thread is always a lack of self-worth. Okay? Because in that instant that something happened to you when you were younger, it's this terrified state, and you go into the, oh, not me, oh, you know, I'm not worthy. And you go into that mode. And most people can recognise that. It is literally 100% of everybody I deal with. There's a lack of self-worth at the base of it. So, brain bargaining. Brain bargaining is about the way the unconscious works. Although we all have different things in our heads, it all works in the same way. It has operating procedures that we all have. We have different content in there, but the way it works is the same. It processes things in a certain way. And that's all that I've done, is I've tapped into things that work for people. And instead of taking on the technique, I look at why it works. And once you've worked out why it works, you understand how the brain processes things. And as soon as you do that, anything anybody throws at me now, I now understand how they're processing it. So I know how to unprocess it. Yep, let me just grab water. Are you still right for him in a minute? Yeah, definitely. Okay, your unconscious mind looks after you. So it's the thing that's been running all your bodily programs since you were born. Its only job in life is to give you whatever you ask of it, and to keep you safe from harm, and to push you towards pleasure. And things are made deliberately pleasurable to keep the human race going. So food, if food wasn't pleasurable, we wouldn't eat it, and we wouldn't live. sex is pleasurable because we have to make the next generation. If sex wasn't pleasurable, we wouldn't bother. So none of you would be here. Yeah? So it pushes you towards pleasure and it keeps you away from danger and pain. Sometimes it needs to give you pain. So if you cut yourself, it might want to tell you that so that you can put something on it and kill the germs off and let it heal. If you break your arm, it'll give you a lot of pain. It'll go, oh, hang about, you're not having your dinner, you're going up the hospital, right? And as soon as you go up the hospital and they put a plaster on it, it stops hurting. It's still broken, but it stops hurting because your brain goes, you've done everything you can. A doctor's look at it, you've had an x-ray, and you now put a plaster around it so you can't move it. So I don't need to give you pain anymore. So it turns the pain off. Right? So wherever possible, your brain, your unconscious mind will look after you. That is its job. So sometimes it gets it wrong. But it can only run the programs that you've given it. Okay? So as a child, if you had a trauma and you went into, oh, I need to be depressed or I need to be anxious or whatever, that's a program you invented. But you invented it as a child. You invented it as a child in a trauma. This is no different to getting a tattoo done while you're drunk, right? It's permanent. You get it, you regret it afterwards, but now you're stuck with it. The great news about anxiety and depression, they are not permanent as long as you do something about it. And so the thing is that you do a bargain with your unconscious mind. And I'm going to do it in a few minutes. And the easiest way of showing it is with pain. So if anybody in the room has pain, I want you to think about that pain. And then when we get to that bit, we're going to try and turn it off for you, all of you. Not just one, okay? Just to show you how it works. So in quite a simple format, what you do is you're asking the unconscious, or you're telling the unconscious, look, this is what's bugging my life now. So say, for instance, it's anxiety. I'm always anxious. I'm either angry or I'm crying. I don't know. I can't deal with life. And you say, but that's a program I installed, and I want to remove it. And you're asking it to remove this program on the basis that you would have a better life without it. So you have to be a little bit creepy at first. You have to say, you're not to blame for this. Right? I installed this program for you. But I was only six, or whatever age you were. I was only six, and you took notice of me. But you're still running it, and I don't want it. So you either have to throw it away or you have to put a different thing in place for it. This is why when we try and have a new good habit, it takes a lot of installing. And they reckon you have to do something for 21 days before it finally gives up and goes, oh, you want to jog every morning? Okay, you seem to be enjoying it, you know. Instead of laying in bed and enjoying that you used to, let's go jogging. Right? And it'll... But it takes 21 days of you going, forcing yourself every morning with willpower, while the unconscious goes, wouldn't you rather lay in bed? No, and go on, you know you would, right? So it tries to help you with the thing that you've taught it all your life. If you want to give up drinking, you know, you've probably taught it for the last 30 years, you like a drink. And then one day you go, no, I'm not drinking anymore. And it goes, but you like a drink. Get it down your neck. It doesn't know. And most of the things we do, we'll go, right, I'm going to do jogging, that's it now, I'm going to be a jogger for the rest of my life. And you do it 3 mornings running and then you go, I hate this. And so the next morning it goes, I knew you'd hate it, that's why I didn't change the programme. I knew you'd be back to that. So you have to talk to the unconscious mind for what it is. It's your little helper. Treat it as though it's a child, a very brainy young child that wants to please you. Because everything you say in your head, it looks for a way to make it happen. Everything you say, it goes, I'll try and get you some of that then. This is how the law of attraction works. you go, I would like a brand new car, brand new car. And then you think about the make and model, and before you know it, you've got it. But you don't. Because another bit of you goes, that's not going to happen, is it? And the two cancel each other out. Okay? So, you have to make your brain fully aware that this is what you want, and here's the reason why. And the brilliant bit is, as soon as you get to the part where you can convince your unconscious mind that the thing it's doing is more harmful than good, it has no option but to change it. If you say, this is hurting me, and it's no longer doing what it should have done, I want it gone, as soon as it gets that message, it will turn that thing off. Now, when I have people and I help them get rid of anxiety, and if you've had anxiety a long time and it infiltrates most of your life, that's a lot of your bits of brain that are full of anxiety. So when I clean it out, I put something back in. And everybody in life would like love, joy and peace. I've never met anybody that doesn't want that yet. So I always fill it up with love, joy and peace. And so instead of this, oh my God, what's going to happen? It's like, oh, I think lots of good things are going to happen today. So the main thing that they should teach at schools is this one thing will change everybody's life if you don't know it already, and not many people know it. Your unconscious mind doesn't understand negatives. Okay? Anything you think about, you also make pictures and you have feelings about and everything else. When you make those pictures and feelings, it takes more notice of that than it does what you say. So, I don't want to split up with my partner. Actually, it hears split up with my partner. Right? So, if you're at the end of a relationship that you don't want it to be, and you keep thinking, I hope we don't split up, I hope we don't split up, your brain starts working out what will happen if you split up. It starts dividing out the house and the car, and it makes you look adverts for flats and things like that. Okay? If you flip it over on its head and think of the opposite, it's what were we like when we first got together? Entirely different ball game. You look at the other person in an entirely different light. You can't change other people, but if you change how you are, people tend to fall in with it. It's a thing called going there first. If you've got children, and before they go to bed at night, you pick the child up and you go, brilliant, we're going to go to Disneyland tomorrow! Yes, we're going to... Now go to bed. They're not going to go to sleep. Because you've just got them in your state of excitedness, and they'll go to bed and be all excited and they'll go to sleep. Whereas if you say, right, just one more sleep now before we go to Disneyland. Okay, in your bed, and when you wake up in the morning, we'll be off there. And you say it very nice and calmly, they join in with it. You hope. Kids don't work like that, do they? Okay. So, it's about telling your unconscious mind what you want. I'll give you a good example. I want you to do all that chocolate biscuits. Yeah? So I want you to visualise now a chocolate biscuit coming out of the packet, okay? And you're just putting it in your mouth now and you take a nice big bite. So just feel the flavour on your tongue, right? Swirl it around a bit and then swallow it, right? Get ready for the next bite. Because normally when we're on the settee and we think about chocolate biscuits, that's exactly what happens. We think chocolate biscuit and we're getting ready to have the chocolate biscuit. But the next thought is, I mustn't have a chocolate biscuit. Okay. Now just listen to that. I mustn't have a chocolate biscuit. Okay? So we sit there for a few seconds going, I mustn't have a chocolate biscuit. Mustn't have a chocolate biscuit. Mustn't have a chocolate biscuit. And next thing we know, we're heading towards the kitchen. The legs work, you see, on their own. Because you've said kitchen. And it goes off, and you open in the cupboard, and you go, oh, I mustn't eat these chocolate biscuits. And you take the chocolate biscuit out of the top and you put it in your mouth and you go, I'll just have the one. I won't eat another one or another one. And then you start eating them all and then you go, but at least I haven't started the second packet. And unless you're feeling sick then, you'll carry on doing the second packet. So whatever you think about, you have to flip it over and you have to say, what's the exact opposite of that? That is what I don't want to happen. What do I want to happen? Right. Now, I'll give you a choice now. Do you want to turn off pain, or do you want to learn how to change a thought from a positive to a negative? So, number one is turn off pain, hands up. And number two is change things from a negative to a positive. I think you win. Okay. Tomorrow I'm doing another talk. If you come back tomorrow, we'll turn off pain. Okay? If anybody wants to come see me and they're in pain, I'll turn it off on the stand for you. Okay? Takes about 10 minutes. Okay, so what I'd like you to do, you might need to put one hand out in front of you, please, and cup it as though you're going to hold something in it. I want you to take a negative thought you're currently having. Anything that keeps popping back up again. Any negative thought is a message that says, you haven't dealt with me yet. This is still a learning loop of, I don't quite know how this works. Even though you're the age you are now, there's something in that you haven't quite learned how it, you haven't finished it off. Right? So if it keeps coming back, it's a message to say, finish it off. So, if you keep thinking about, I've got a problem, I've got a problem, I've got a problem, you end up with a problem that you don't try and solve. So if you're thinking about what you don't want, that is what you're going to get. So I want you to take that thing out of your head and I want you to place it in your hand. And I want you to give it a form. I want you to make it real in your hand. Give it a size, give it a weight, give it a texture, a colour, whether you can see through it or it's obscured. Whatever you want to do with it. And bounce your hand up and down and notice there's a weight to it. Okay? As soon as you've got it real, this is going to start to work. Notice if you put it near back to your head again that it has some effect on you. But as soon as you move it further away from your head, it has less effect on you. Okay? Now, one of two techniques here. But I think we're going to go for the throw it because it's funnier. Okay, so you take that. As soon as it's real now, get it real, and I want you to throw it away as hard as you can in front of you. Okay? Sorry to the people in front of the room. Okay? Now, I want you to do it again, but I want you to do it more quickly this time. So put it back on your hand. If you can, you might notice it's a lot faded or a lot lighter or whatever. But whatever's left of it, put it back on your hand. Give it that form again. Get it real. Now throw it. Quickly. Hard. All right? Now we're going to do it really quickly. Put your hand out. Think about it, put it on your hand, throw it. Hand it, put it on your hand, throw it. Think of some silly music like Benny Hill or something. Put it on your hand, throw it. Keep throwing it, put it on your hand, throw it. Straight away, as fast as you can. Okay, put your hand out now. Is it still there? Anybody still got it? No. It's gone. Don't try too hard to get it back. Okay, that is a technique I do for throwing things away, but there's a beautiful little one that comes before that that you can do. If something keeps coming back to you as a message, you need to deal with it. Okay? Typically, a thing that will keep coming back is a relationship problem. If we leave a relationship, however sad it might be, we can always go, oh, well, I did it because of this, this, and this. If somebody leaves you, it leaves you a bit sort of, oh, what happened there? Was it me? Was it them? Did I say something? And all sorts of things. And we blame all sorts of bits. If it keeps coming back, it's because you haven't finished that off. And so if it keeps coming back, all I want you to do is say to yourself, okay, sit down quietly somewhere and say, okay, you keep giving me this damn message about my old relationship. I'm going to think about it now, and then now I'm going to make a decision of what I've learned, and then you're going to go away. Okay? So you sit down and you think it through, and you might start thinking of all the different things that you've always thought of before, but come to a decision. I'm better off without him. That's the decision, right? Loop finished, lesson learned, don't get another one like him or her. Okay? Because we tend to repeat it, don't we? We can't please them, so we're now on to... in life, you see, if we meet somebody awkward when we were a kid, everybody else we can please, and we know the rules. We know how to please people. You know, you take a big orange mess on a bit of paper home to your mum, and you go, "Look at this, mummy," and she goes, "Oh, that's a nice orange." And you go, "It's a picture of you, mummy," and she goes, "Oh, lovely," and she puts it on the fridge. Unconditional love. But you try and sit on your dad's knee, and he's just come home from work, and he's a bit tired, and he goes, "Get off." And then you start to try and please daddy, but you don't have to please mummy, because almost anything you do pleases mummy. So you then go out of your way to please awkward buggers. And you carry on throughout life not understanding that the last bit of the rule is there are some people you can't please. That's it. It's as simple as that. As soon as you put that last bit into place, you don't have to please everybody. Simple. Done. Huh? Program goes to bed and he goes, "Oh, done with that." Huh? So, with your hand, if you keep getting a repeated message, it's because you're thinking about it negatively. So if you throw it away and it still hasn't finished the message, it'll keep coming back. So pop your hand out, think of something else that's bothering you, and I want you to imagine that you've got negative written on the palm of your hand. Okay? So as soon as you have a negative thought, don't catch yourself with every negative thought, because you apparently we have 70,000 thoughts a day. You'll go crazy. Okay? But if something keeps coming back that's negative, pop your hand there, place it on your hand, give it that form again, and then go, "That is what I don't want. And if I keep thinking about what I don't want, that's what my unconscious will keep trying to give me." Right? So take all the negative word out of it. Turn your hand over and imagine that you've got positive written across your knuckles. As soon as you've turned it over, for a start, you've dropped the negative. Because the brain is very easily fooled into reality and pretend. Right? So as soon as you put something on your hand, it's come out of your head anyway, so it doesn't bother you anymore. And as soon as you flip your hand over, it's going, "Oh, we've dropped it now." And now you think about, what is it I want to happen? What's the exact opposite of the thing that you've just put on there? And that will always be the right answer. So one is, I don't want this to happen. The other one is, I want this to happen. It literally is as simple as that. So brain bargaining is just a matter of the fact that it listens to everything you say. If you look in the mirror and you don't like yourself and you say, "I'm fat and ugly, I'm fat and ugly, I'm fat and ugly," you, even if you don't become fat and ugly, you will think you are even more each day that you say it, because you'll have convinced yourself that that's what you are. I used to deal with people helping them with weight loss, and it was the prettiest clients I ever had that told me the most faults they had about them. Because everybody else told them their faults as well. It was almost like, "Well, you're not perfect, because look, your elbows are a bit wrinkly." And so they would all know. And even so, it's nothing to do with about your appearance, because even if you absolutely were stunning, you'd still moan about it. Okay, I can guarantee you that. There's always this thing of we're looking for faults in us, and it might be the way we're brought up. It's a very British thing to play things down, to, you know, you mustn't blow your own trumpet, don't be a big head, all those sorts of things. And we try and fit in with all of that. And in particular with women is that they look after the children and the husband and everything else. Not much of that has changed. It's all about looking after everybody else. But you have to look after yourself. You can't fill anything from an empty jug. Okay? And when you go on a plane, they say, if the pressure goes in the plane, oxygen mass will come out the roof, and you just pull on it, and if you're with anybody that needs it putting on, please put your own on first. They always say that, and we always ignore it. So you can imagine there somebody with 5 kids, and she goes, "Right, I'm not putting mine on first, I'll save the kids." One kid, two kids, three kids, second one goes blue, she goes blue, they die, two kids die, she dies. Whereas if she puts a mask on first, she can actually go, right, which kid is the bluest? And we'll go around in order, there's no panic, there's nothing. You must always look after yourself, because in looking after yourself, you can look after other people better anyway. And there's a very good tip I'll give you here, is when you're asked to do stuff, just say no. Okay, all the things that we resent, all the anger we have inside, is usually about us. Anything that you get inside that sets you off and makes you really angry is not about you, not about the other person. It's because you've allowed it. And even when I deal with horrendous cases of child abuse and things like that, it's not the abuse that's caused the damage, it's how that child feels about themselves because of the abuse. Every time. It's never the abuser. Nothing to do with that. Okay? So, you all have ways now to think of nice positive thoughts. You can put negative thoughts on your hand and flick them over. If you're fed up of it, turn it into a real thing and throw it away. In the same way that the brain doesn't know the difference between reality and make-believe, it will throw it away. I think we've all had that dream where we dream our partner cheats, and the next day we make life hell for them. Because even though it's not real, well, we must have dreamed it for a reason, mustn't we? And we give them some stick. But it's not real. That's just the way the brain processes things. It sees something, it's make-believe, and then it goes, must be a bit real. Okay. So anything you need to do, try and look on the brighter side of it. If you've got something hidden deep in your past, then please come and have a chat with me on my stand. I'm over that sort of corner somewhere near the window. And I've been Stephen Blake, and you've been a wonderful audience. Thank you.